Hi, welcome to Infusion, the podcast. I'm comedian Chris Patrick, a.k.a. Supplement Power Man, and I'm here with my co-host and significant other, Rach.
Hey, guys.
And today we got a great show for you. We have, she's a lawyer, an author, a radio show host. You may know her, and she's also transgender. And you may know her as Ellie from Ellie 2.0 on AM 950, the progressive talk of Minneapolis. We got the one and only Ellie Krug on the show. Ellie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
So, Ellie, can you tell us about your journey from, you know, being transgender and all that?
Well, that's a pretty broad question.
Try to narrow it down just a little bit.
You just asked me, how was the drive from New York to L.A.? Right.
And he stopped along the way.
Yeah, I mean, did you stop for the bathroom?
Okay, we know you started out as a lawyer in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, do you want to talk about a lawyer? Or do you want to talk about the transgender? I mean, so my question is, how did you know? A lot of people know since birth.
So, you know, I think that part of this is we have to put everything into time frames.
Okay.
You know, I grew up in the 60s and the 70s. I mean, I was almost 12 years old when Stonewall happened. And so that time of a period in American life was pretty oppressive if you were LGBTQ.
Yeah, it was cut and dry. It was, yes. Yeah.
And I mean, the word transgender hadn't even been invented.
No.
Yeah.
So I knew something was up. I remember my mother caught me once in the bathtub trying to shave my legs.
Okay.
Because I'd seen her do that. And I don't know. I guess that seemed right. I don't know. But by the time I was 11, I was going into my sister's bedroom, trust me, when no one was home, and, you know, putting on her panties and camisole, and then standing in front of the mirror, and, you know, electricity would shoot through my body because, from the front, it didn't look right. But if I turned to the side, I literally looked like a girl. And it just, the electricity that went through my body at that realization was unbelievable.
Feeling like you were yourself.
Well, you know, at 11 years old, I don't know what I felt other than that, like, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. And of course, I kept going back to that well. The problem was that, again, you know, a society where the idea that your brain wouldn't match your body, I mean.
Yeah.
And I vividly remember seeing Life magazine when they featured Christine Jorgensen, one of the very first transgender people at the time called transsexuals. It's a phrase that is not favored today. And I remember reading and seeing, wow, you know, holy cow, this is, you know, somebody, you know, actually was, you know, changed their genders and lived what Christine Jorgensen actually lived a very successful life. But it was, again, at a time when living authentically was not something ever really talked about. I remember in junior high, we had a gay counselor, you know, and he got beat up very badly one night from something, and everybody knew about that, and he had to leave his job. So these were things about shame, to be ashamed of.
Right.
I was a relatively smart kid, and I thought that eventually it would go away.
Mm-hmm.
Then I fell in love with a girl when I was in high school. She was a sophomore. I was a freshman. I fell in love, and I, you know, thought, well, that'll take care of it. And, you know, for a while it did. But the thing about human authenticity, I have this saying, and if anybody here has ever listened to me give a talk around LGBTQ stuff, human authenticity will not leave you alone until you listen to it.
Yeah.
It won't. And so it kept coming back, usually much stronger than when I had suppressed it. It was all about suppressing it. But it would come back, and eventually, you know, I married my high school sweetheart. I thought, you know, I remember the night before the wedding, and going to a trash thing outside of a office building and throwing away my stash of lingerie and bras and all kinds of things that I had accumulated during my time in college and law school, and throwing it away and saying, I don't need you anymore. I'm going to be, you know, good. I'm going to be loyal to my wife, and I'm not going to dress anymore. You know, and I'll tell you, that lasted for about, maybe 9 months. And then before I knew it, I was wearing her underwear and her beautiful pink sundress. So, you know, and eventually I realized that it would not go away. And so I started down the road of trying to get therapy and find a therapist who could give me a mantra to stay married. I really loved my wife. It was a wonderful, wonderful, special marriage, unique marriage. People would come to us and say, we're very jealous of what you have. We wish we had what you did do. And so so I tried to find a therapist to help me. And then eventually I had a moment of truth where I realized that someday I'd be on my deathbed and I'd look back and I'd regret not being braver to be myself. So then I ended up leaving my wife and transitioning.
And then you went to Boston or whatever. You were in Boston.
Yep.
Going to college.
I went to Boston College Law School. I went to Coe College in Cedar Rapids for undergrad, and then Boston College Law School. Learned how to be a trial lawyer in downtown Boston. Practiced with a large firm there, but there were a lot of temptations in Boston. There were I also on top of everything else, to make it very, very complicated, I had same-sex attractions. Mm-hmm. So I was also attracted to men, and I had these raging fantasies about men. So I just thought that if we moved back to Iowa, I could control all of that.
Okay.
Because Iowa is boring.
Yeah.
And safe.
Yeah.
How old were you at that time?
When we moved back to Iowa?
Yes.
So about 31.
Okay. And so when did you start the transition? About how old were you at that time?
I did not transition until I was 52.
Okay.
Okay.
So between moving back to Iowa, getting a house in the best neighborhood and then building this incredible life. I mean, before it was all over, I mean, we had two beautiful daughters. I had my own law firm with multiple employees. I made a lot of money. We had three cars and a four-car garage, a country club membership, brokerage accounts, all of that. And I knew that if I transitioned, I knew that if my story, my secret came out, I knew that everything I just listed for you, that I would lose it.
Right.
Yeah, because you say on your website that you left the rich law life for the marginalized transgender human women's group.
I did. Yeah. I mean, not voluntarily. I mean, it's just human authenticity won't leave you alone, and I had to listen to it.
Yeah. You had to own yourself.
I did. You know, and I mean, we humans are not, we're not born with human owner's manuals.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, there's not like this big book we can go consult. Now, I don't want to insult people who are religious and believe that the Bible is important and all that. Of course, the Bible and the Quran, I mean, they're important religious texts. But the problem is, on a day-to-day basis, as we face the human condition, we don't have this thing that we can go to, like, look under T for transgender. Oh, this is what that means. Mm-hmm. And here's what comes next. You know, we just don't.
Now, I don't mean to offend, but some people still to this day link transgender with drag queens. Can you decipher that for people that don't understand that?
Yeah, Rich, that's a wonderful question. Okay. You know, the drag queen culture really is something that literally goes back to the turn of the 20th century. So 1800s to early 1900s. And it was certainly a form of expression for people who were trying to suppress their identity. It was a safe place to, to be yourself on a stage. But it was obviously interpreted the wrong way. I mean, people saw it as performance rather than as reality, as authenticity. As the movement for LGBTQ rights began, you've got Stonewall that occurred in 1969, and as transgender people felt that they had the right to be themselves more, and they didn't have to be performance art, then, you know, sort of that broke away, and drag queens continued to do their performance. I mean, they still exist. There was the Townhouse in St. Paul that was a drag queen venue for a very long time, and where trans people would gather. The problem with drag queens, so this is exceedingly personal, is I think that it confuses people.
Yes.
And many people who do drag mm-hmm. now aren't, you know, they may be gay men, okay? Yep. But they're not for the most part transgender.
Right.
And the problem for the trans community is that we continue on a large scale to face discrimination.
Right.
And almost all of that is based on the idea that it is a choice to be trans.
Yes.
That you don't have to be transgender. Mm-hmm. And the fact that maybe, you know, conservative people can see, not that they're going to drag shows, although I'm sure some are secretly, but that they can see that maybe somebody turns it on and then turns it off.
Yes.
My concern is that it gets, you know, the lines get very fuzzy.
Yeah.
And then that then reinforces the view that being trans is a choice. And it's also around objectification and fetishizing, things like that. I mean, people who do drag, God love you. It really is an art form. But I just fear that it makes things very fuzzy for trans people.
And that's what I wanted to establish out there, that when you are choosing to be transgender, it's not a choice.
Right.
You know, yeah. It's not a choice. It is because you personally have made a very difficult decision to finally be who you are.
Yeah, I think that's exceedingly accurate, except for the one part, which is the decision was forced on me. Okay, I mean, you know, I alluded to the moment of truth, and what happened was it was the night of 9/11, and it was that night I'd been suppressing for a very long time. At that point, I was on therapist number 3. I'd fired the first 2 therapists because they had told me that I needed to come out to my wife. I needed to be me or I would end up killing myself. And I fired them because I didn't want that advice. And I had started down the road with the third therapist, and then 9/11 happened. And I could not get out of my head that I was on one of those planes. And then sitting in church with my wife and my children, I just did this silly game that humans sometimes do, which is, what would be your last thoughts?
Right.
And for me, the last thoughts, of course, would be my wife and my children and some other people that were close. But then out of left field, a thought that I had never, ever, ever had before then, because this was real. It's 9/11. We were watching people jump out of buildings to avoid the fire.
Yep.
You know, and we had to continue. I mean, how many times on 9/11 did you have to see the planes go into the buildings?
Yeah.
And so for me, the very, very last thought was coward.
Yeah.
You're going to die a coward. And, you know, there are just some things in life that you absolutely know from the deepest recesses of your heart and corners of your soul, where you just absolutely know that is unlivable.
Yeah.
And it was. It was just unlivable. To know that that's what my last thought would be, to think that I would then go forward and live another 30 years, even though I would have all the love in the world and all of the riches. I mean, mm-hmm. I would have died a millionaire several times over. I have no doubt about that. But it was very clear to me on 9/11 that none of that would have mattered. What would have mattered was would have been my self-respect, which I would have had absolutely none of on my deathbed.
So since transitioning, you've authored the book, you've started some nonprofits. You do the speaking now.
I do,
and you do the radio show. How has your life been now? Are you happy that you finally came out and you're finally going this way? And
I think that I'm a relatively contented and happy person. I mean, the work that I do. I'm a hopeless idealist, and I wasn't able to do that when I was suppressing my gender identity because I couldn't be idealistic about the world if I wasn't idealistic about myself. And so my goal is to make a difference in the world. It really is. I mean, that's actually why I'm here talking to you.
Yeah.
Just thinking in some little way it might help somebody somewhere.
That's one of the reasons we wanted to I wanted to do the podcast with you because I've heard your show. I listen to the station all the time.
Great, thank you.
when we're driving, it's like, hold on, Tom's on. I got to listen to Tom Hartman's show, you know. And then of course, you know. Now I get to listen to Matt McNeil. I've called into Matt McNeil shows a few times, but I wanted to have you on because that's one of the things is understanding because we can look at this and go. Well, this person used to be a guy, used to be, and it's like, well, have you ever talked to him? Have you ever, you know, anything about this person? You know,
have you had the conversation?
Yeah.
Right. No. And thank you. And I really appreciate that part and all of, I do, but to finish, about happiness.
Yeah.
I am content. Most of the days I'm happy. But I'm alone. And I was pretty certain that's the way that it would come out. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I look relatively good for my age and I look relatively feminine and female, but the voice is highly problematic in my dating life. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of men that I meet that, you know, until they hear the voice, they're like, you know, thumbs up. But then when they hear the voice, they are running away. And so, there is that gap in my life.
Sure.
And most of the time it's livable, okay? Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, it's like, oh boy, it would be really great to have human touch. And right. It would really be great to be loved as Ellie.
Yeah.
To have somebody actually, you know, love me. And the problem also is, so on top of all of this, is that my marriage, my ex-wife, we're talking like Cadillac, okay? Mm-hmm. Like Escalade, all right? And even Tesla. We're talking that kind of quality. Mm-hmm. And it seems that I attract a whole lot of Chevys now.
Yeah. Right.
With a Hemi?
You know, and you know, I mean, I'm not going to settle. I mean, it's that age old, I think, thing that many people, particularly a lot of women, sure. have. So I'm not going to allow loneliness, I'm alone. Very rarely lonely. I'm not going to allow that to drive me to right. get into a relationship where I, you know, won't, you know, be happy ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you've seemed to have, you know, a pretty successful life. I mean, you're a successful lawyer. You got, Call for Justice LLC and you got, other LLCs and you're also doing your talks. Can you explain more about what, when you, go out to talk, do you talk to, companies? Do you talk to groups?
I talk all over the place. I talk to everybody. So, I mean, today I spoke to a group of legal administrators in Seattle and then pivoted from that to a half hour later doing a 2-hour talk for the city of Carlsbad, California. You know, yesterday was doing 3 trainings for a law firm. And Monday was doing a training for an international company that makes urological products, if you can believe it. So, you know, so it's all, you know, and then colleges, universities, nonprofits, all of that stuff. What I do is I come and I teach people how to get along with each other. Yeah. So my work, I mean, even though I'm trans and mm-hmm. I will certainly come and talk about how to be welcoming to trans sure. people or LGBTQ people,
right.
The vast majority of people want me to come in and talk about inclusivity for all humans, regardless of LGBTQ or skin right. color, how to make workplaces more welcoming to people, how to make them people feel as if they matter. That's really what inclusivity is, the extension to which extent to which humans feel that they matter. And then I have a training around allyship. I have training around skin color and white fragility. And I have some motivational talks. I gave a talk last week about, it's titled Change Genders, Change Perspectives. So, you know, many people, trans people talk about coming out. Mm-hmm. That's actually the discussion we're having right now.
Yeah.
But I have a talk where I talk about what's it like living as a chick for a dozen years after 52 years of living as a dude, you know, and the differences are just, you know, amazing. They really are. So,
yeah. I work at the hospital and I don't think there's even enough at the hospital. I was talking to a coworker today and she's like, "You're going to do what after work?" And she, Trump supporter, you know, and it was, she was like, "You're going to go talk to a transgender on your podcast. Like, you're going to do what?" And I'm like, who cares? It's a great conversation.
and it's conversations that we should be having, you right, know, that, right. You know, it's understanding, you know,
like I said, my kids are bi. Like, who cares? I said, I'm never going to close my kids down because that's my children. That's my love.
Thank you for that. Well, I mean, not every parent would be that way. You know, I will tell you, though, I've gone into situations where there are intolerant people. I mean, the city of Hastings had an experience where they issued a proclamation 3 years ago welcoming all humans, including LGBTQ. And then there were six churches and a Christian academy. Nothing against Christians, please, but we issued a public letter, 2-page letter, decrying transgenderism and saying that they were good with the public proclamation about welcoming her, but they did not want transgender people in Hastings. So, of course, I went to Hastings and talked to them. Sure. And so, I mean, I talked to 140 people in a room, and they just wanted to keep asking me questions. All was very respectful. Mm-hmm. My answers back were respectful. The one thing that I did not do, and I want to make sure that your listeners understand this, the one thing that I did not do is I did not shame them and I did not yell at them. And instead I talked to them as humans and talked to them about the things that we have in common, which is our kids.
Yes.
Trying to survive the human condition, wanting to be safe, you know?
And that's what I did with her. I said, "You love your daughter. I love my children." And I think that's where people they close the gap. When you start shaming and close, it starts closing people down.
It does, absolutely.
When you start hatred, it starts closing people down.
Yep.
So you can only open conversations with love.
You know, and I think that, so one of my trainings is, as I said, around inclusivity. And we have an exercise in that where I ask people to self-identify. What do you want to be known for? It's one of the exercises. And they have all kinds of choices, like socioeconomic class or gender or religion or age or a number of different things. But do you know, across the country, and I am talking red states, blue states, Bernie states, I am talking big cities, small towns, rural, urban, do you know across the country, the overriding choice, I mean, and we are talking by many percentage points on my polling, like, you know, 50 percentage points, 60 percentage points, the overriding choice that people want to be known for is compassion. With all those choices, they want to be known for compassion. And no one understands this. We all think that we hate each other. You know, I mean, we all think that we do. We're in those respective camps. But if we can get people out of the megaphone and get them into a setting where we can talk about things that are important to them, like the ability to make a living, like the ability to live authentically, like the ability to just be left alone, you know, but with respect and dignity, then people are like, well, yeah, I want that too. And I many times characterize myself as the canary in the coal mine that's actually living and thriving.
Right.
Because, sorry.
Okay.
Ellie has a phone call. Well, that's one of the things too. I always go back to, you know, Marvin Gaye's song, you know, the lyrics and what's going on, you know, talk to me so you can see, you know, what's going on, you know. And a lot of times when people do sit down, when you find people sitting down and people actually talking, you actually do find this, that, hey, you know what, there is a lot in common, you know, that. And that was one of the things. There's a video, I think I saw it on Facebook or something like that, but they were having a Trump rally and the Black Lives Matter people came in, and one of the guys from the Trump rally goes, we're going to invite one of the Black Lives Matter people up. And the guy went on the talk, said, no, we're not anti-cops. And when they were actually listening, that he goes, next thing you know, I'm taking pictures with the people. We're sharing. Yeah. And it's such a thing, man. And it sometimes almost brings tears to my eyes, because it's one of the things too, is that you have to talk to this person. Do you even know anything about this person?
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
Before you start, you know, downsizing or saying something bad about them, do you even know them? Do you know what they're going through? You know?
Well, and you know, I mean, we all generally, because we're human, we have fear of other. And I mean, that's sort of inbred, it's genetically bred to us, but we have to be brave and we have to overcome that fear. I am a huge believer in the power of human familiarity. I am.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, I use my voice as a tool for that. So we start the trainings and I can see people reacting with their eyes about the fact that they did not expect this voice coming out of this body. Right. And I talk to them about that. And about midway through one of the trainings, I ask, you know, how are you doing with the voice? Are you getting used to it? Are you even starting to like me a little bit? You know, and then I see people starting to nod.
Yeah.
And, but then I say, well, even if, you know, still if it's a problem, wait till we're done. And so, I mean, I just did this 3 hours ago with the training with the city of Carlsbad. At the end, I said, okay, last question. How are you doing with my voice? Have you gotten past the fact that I am different? And do you kind of like me now? And I saw all kinds of heads nodding. And that's really what it is. We have to be brave. We have to be brave to get past mm-hmm. our fears.
Yep.
Take some risks. Yes. And it's not a whole big risk, because right. all you got to do is ask, hey, do you have a kid or a pet in your life?
Yep.
And boom, guess what? You got a conversation going.
Right.
Okay, well, I want to ask you more. Ellie. Ellie has a book out called Getting to Ellen, a memoir about love, honesty, and gender changes. Where can they find that book? Can they find that Amazon or any place books are sold?
Amazon, Kindle, Nook. It's at the bookseller in Uptown, at Majors and Quinn. The book is available online at all the usual places.
Okay, and then if you want to listen to Ellie, Ellie's on Ellie 2.0 on AM 950, the Progressive Talk of Minneapolis. Saturdays, 10 to...
10 to 11, and then on Sundays from 1 to 2.
10 to 11 on Sundays, 1 to 2. And if you want to get Ellie to come give a talk or anything, where can they reach you there? You can. I know you can go on her website.
Yep, you can go visit my website at Ellie at www.elliekrug.com. You can email me at ellijkrug@gmail.com. Remember the J. And, you know, I'm happy to talk with all people. And if somebody wants me to come speak, we can explore working that out.
Okay, Ellie, thanks so much for coming to the show, for being on the show today. And once again, that the name of that book is Getting to Ellen, a memoir of love, honesty, and gender changes. And Ellie's also a practicing lawyer here in Minnesota. Are you licensed in this?
Yeah, I'm licensed, but I don't practice anymore. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Don't send anybody here for me to
work. Sorry about that. And once again, it's Ellie 2.0, AM 950, the Progressive Talk in Minneapolis, 10 to 2.
No, 10 to 11 on 10
to 11, 10 to 11 on Saturdays and then also on Sundays. Listen to her show. And it, like I said, if you got any more of the questions, you can always reach her by her website. Ellie, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks, both of you, for having me.
Of
I'm
course.
Just really thank thrilled. You. Thanks yep. so yeah. very much.
Yep, thank you.
Okay.